Connects and Joy 94.9. It's a Monday night. It's about 7 minutes past 8 o'clock. It's Generation X for another night, and I'm joined by Emma. Emma, thank you so much for joining me.
No worries.
How's it going?
Going
well. What's new in your life?
Oh, gosh. Nothing really.
Nothing really?
Nothing at all. I'm very boring.
What's new on the show today?
On the show today, we're talking about some really exciting things. I really wanted to draw everyone's attention to the new Get Up ad campaign. Pro-marriage equality. It is tugging on the heartstrings of pretty much everyone now that it's gone viral.
Yeah, it's a lot more. I think it's probably one of the most effective campaigns brought out by Get Up, of course, and they're appealing for people to donate money so that they can get it actually on the TV.
Air, yeah.
So that'll be good if they manage to get that up. I don't know, maybe they will or they won't. You can, I suppose, donate to Get Up. I donated to Get Up last time, $20, so that the Prime Minister would meet with those gay couples, and it hasn't happened yet. So that's not exactly Get Up's fault.
You've been robbed.
I've been absolutely robbed. This is Generation X and Joy 94.9. This show, we've got a really big show because I'm talking to Ben Gresham, who is a member of Hillsong, a member of Freedom to Be, which is a religious group for gay Christians, and we're talking all about his experiences, as well as the upcoming ALP conference, which is just 5 days away. Cannot believe it. I'll be in Sydney in 5 days.
Hey, this is Joel Creasy. You're listening to the twinkiest show on Joy, Generation Next.
They said there were demons in me and spirits of homosexuality, which are demonic. Satan's trying to get to you, and you can't let him win, and things can still get better.
I underwent a transformation from utter homosexuality. I mean, I was not remotely attracted to women.
The depression escalated in an hour. Attempted suicide a few times. I honestly look back and I honestly don't know how I survived.
You're on Generation X on Joy 94.9. That was an excerpt from an upcoming documentary all about ex-gay conversion therapies. It features interviews with the groups that say that homosexuality is a sexual brokenness that can and should be healed, as well as the people who've gone through these sort of programs and come out the other end. It's called The Cure, and one of the subjects whose story is featured in the documentary is Ben Gresham today. Ben is a youth coordinator for Freedom to Be, a group for Christians who identify as gay or lesbian. Ben, thank you so much for joining us.
Good to be here. Thanks, Jacob.
You've written extensively, and I've read your blog, just a few parts about your personal story and how you sort of came to be in the position that you're in now. Where did it all begin for you? At what point did you think about maybe you might be gay?
Probably when I think at the end of the day, you know, I've always known that there was something a bit different about me. Probably when I was about 6 years old, and I remember sitting down watching, you know, Disney's The Little Mermaid with my sister, and just remember thinking that I wasn't interested in, you know, Ariel the mermaid like I probably should be. I was interested in Eric, so I think, you know, I've known I was gay probably from about that moment, or at least I knew I was a bit different. But when I came out, it was a bit of a different story. I was 16 then, and, you know, I knew for sure that I was gay. However, it wasn't something that I, you know, embraced with everything that I was, I guess.
Why didn't you embrace it, I suppose? Was it a religious upbringing that you were brought up in?
I think it was more, it was a combination. I think, generally, I think regardless of whether you're from a religious or church background or not, I think in Australia, still the commonly accepted norm and culture is to be, you know, straight and to, you know, for your parents to expect you to grow up and have, you know, a wife and kids and, you know, just be like, I guess, every other, you know, suburban family in a way.
Yeah,
You know, the common norm isn't to grow up to be gay. And particularly, you know, within the church, you know, you're told from such a young age that if you are gay or if you are lesbian or anything, I guess, apart from the norm, that, you know, it's against God's will and that you're going to hell and that it's a sin. So, you know, you're exactly, when you grow up as gay, you're essentially growing up to be something that you've been taught to hate, and that's a big challenge.
You know, in Australia, we're a fairly sort of secular country. and we don't have, I don't think we have quite the level of Bible bashers that we do, that, you know, the United States does. But I think you're right that there is still a real disinclination towards acceptance of homosexuality, especially when little kids are concerned. We have this attitude that little kids are sexually neutral and they don't have an orientation, and at some point they choose it. Was that kind of the attitude of your parents?
Yeah, definitely. Well, generally my parents, you know, didn't really speak too much about it. I guess that the norm for them was, you know, they expected me to be, you know, straight, have a family and kids in the future. Like, they wouldn't have expected me ever to be gay, or they wouldn't have wanted me to be gay. Yeah. Having said that, now they're really great, and they marched in the last Mardi Gras. But, you know, obviously between now and you know, ages ago, now and then, there was a big journey for them as well as for me.
Tell me about that journey. How did you sort of get to that point where you're 16, and even though your parents aren't totally against it, it's still something that maybe you yourself thought was not right and you could probably change or do something about it?
Yeah, well, for me, you know, my faith, you know, my personal faith and my religious beliefs were very personal to me, and they were individual choices that I decided to make. It wasn't like my parents never forced me to go to church, never made me conform to any of these certain, I guess, Christian or biblical standards, but it was a decision that I chose to make. My faith was pretty much everything to me. You know, I'd go to school, and then, you know, I went to church generally about 4 or 5 times a week, and it was a huge part of my life. And I think when something's a huge part of your life and you value it and you respect it, you know, you're gonna listen to them, and you're gonna listen to the leaders there, and you're going to trust them and believe them. When if somebody says to you, like they did to me at 16, that I can change, you're gonna believe that.
Was it a space where you could actually say, I think I might be gay, or was it a kind of place where it was like, I can't say this at all, I can't let it out, I can't show this side of me?
Yeah, it was more you can't say that at all. Like, yeah. If I was to say that I think I might be gay, then it would almost be like I may as well have done the whole leap and said that I was gay. You know, I still would have been labelled with a brush, you know, he's confused, or he's dealing with a struggle, or he's got sexual sin in his life, or, you know, something very similar along those lines. I mean, everything is quite, well, growing up then anyway, everything to me seemed quite black and white. And so you either say you were something or you weren't. Like, there was not really, I guess, a middle space. And so for me, when I came out, like, when I finally got all the courage and, you know, mustered up all the strength and to come out to my church leader at the time, it was quite difficult.
What was his response? What was the attitude, I suppose, that you were getting from your religious leaders? Because these are, I imagine, I mean, you don't go to church as a 16-year-old because you're being forced to. No. You're obviously going by your own volition. In some ways, I suppose, are you kind of taking on board exactly what they're saying and agreeing with what they were saying?
Well, as for me, you know, as somebody who at the time, you know, and still now takes his faith very seriously, I wanted to, you know, grow in my faith and to be, I guess, as much a part of that church as anybody else. And so when my leader at the time, who was older and generally a lot wiser, well, so I thought, gave me some advice, I'd want to listen to him and take that on board. I don't think it was necessarily his intention, for example, when he told me that, you know, I could change and that being gay was wrong and it was a sin, you know, I don't think it was his intention to hurt me or for me to go through all the trauma and damage. I believe that he honestly was doing the best that he knew how, because it's about, again, at the end of the day, I think there's a lot of ignorance going around in the church and in society, and so there's a lot of misinformation about gay and lesbian people and who we are.
How did that lead into you becoming involved in ex-gay programs?
The options for me when I came out was either, there were two options. You either go through ex-gay programs and you try to change your sexual orientation, and then you grow up, you have a wife, you have kids, and you become just another, you know, normal, happy family, which to me seemed like the best yeah. option, the best idea. I wanted to fit in. I wanted to be the same as my friends. I wanted to, I guess, be part of the church as well.
Yeah.
And so that was one option. The second option I got was, well, if you're not going to try to change, then you can leave church. You'll most likely go to hell. Your friends won't accept you, your family won't accept you. So it was just the picture that was painted for me about being gay and about what would happen if I came out was completely different to what did happen when I finally did come out. When I finally did come out, of course, I realized that there were lots of amazing gay and lesbian people, that half the stuff I had been told about them weren't true, and that there were lots of support networks and lots of people just like me who had been through similar things and who did have their faith and were gay or lesbian or bisexual.
I was watching a video from Dan Savage, and he was talking about his Catholic upbringing, and for a long time he just accepted as gospel anything that priests said until he kind of worked out that he was gay. And he was talking about how he was struggling to reconcile this image of gay people that the Catholic Church was giving him and the reality that he was feeling himself. He didn't, you know, think that he was an evil person and he didn't want to commit harm to anybody. He was just gay. And that kind of was the thing that set him off thinking, well, if they're wrong about homosexuality, what else are they wrong about? But I suppose for you, your Christian faith, it didn't kind of dissipate after that. You didn't say, well, you know, bugger the church, I'm just going to leave and do my own thing now.
Oh, well, you know, I think for me it definitely raised those questions. I mean, you know, when I came out as gay and I said, well, the church is wrong about this and I know they're wrong about this, you know, again, it raises a whole heap of questions. And for me, things stopped being black and white and there was a lot of grey. So I used to believe, you know, that, for example, that the Bible was, you know, without a doubt the word of God. Now I believe, you know, that it's inspired by God. Now it's two very different things. I believe that there's some flaws in it. I do still have very strong faith, but I think my faith is more, it's developed and it's a bit more mature now. So for example, when I go to church, I don't take everything that the pastor says as, you know, as gospel truth. But, you know, I take it with a grain of salt and I go, okay, well, let's look at that and do I believe that or not? Like, or is that in line with what I believe my faith to be?
This is Generation X on Joy 94.9, 25 minutes past 7 o'clock. We're speaking to Ben Gresham all throughout the show today about his experience in Hillsong and in the church and also being gay and what that means for him. Tweet us your thoughts. How can we do that?
You can tweet us at GenXJoy949 at twitter.com.
Certainly.
Hi, I'm Cindy Lauper, and if you just want to have fun, do you? Keep listening to Joy 94.9 FM.
Did you stay with the same church after you decided to come out?
I did. I did stay with the same church, and I it was incredibly difficult. When I came out, the majority of my friends and disappeared and, you know, kind of distanced themselves. But I did have a few friends who stayed close by, and they were a great support network, and I stayed there for, you know, for a long time, and I'm still there. And I saw the church move forward. Even in these last few years, I've seen the church move forward from running ex-gay programs, being very anti-gay, to they no longer run ex-gay programs at the moment. They're moving forward. They've got a bit more of an understanding. I mean, they're still not completely there, but I think they're definitely on the journey, and I think there's a bit of hope for them. And I honestly don't believe that it's even, you know, we talk about same-sex marriage a lot, and the Australian Christian lobby, they seem to be quite prominent. I don't think, even with the Australian Christian lobby, I think there's more ignorance than actual knowledge there, and I honestly do believe that they, inside of them, they think they're doing the right thing, although they don't see what we see, of course, being having to deal with this and not having these rights. I think that's sad.
Was that attitude common? You mentioned that you had some friends in the church who decided to distance themselves from you. Was that because they felt like they were going to become caught up in whatever you were caught up in and become gay themselves, or I don't know, they were going to catch something? I don't know.
Look, that could have been it. I don't think that was. I think it was more that, you know, I was seen from that stage, I was seen as somebody who was a sinner, somebody who caused trouble, and it was just easier for them not to be associated with me, which was sad. But I guess, you know, at that stage, when you come out, as so many people would know, you realize who your real friends are and who have just been your acquaintances. It's a tough lesson to learn, but, you know, I've got some really good friends out of that situation and still a lot of people that are very close to me today.
Now, you mentioned on your website that you're a member of Hillsong, and I have to admit, when I read, you know, I'm a member of Hillsong, red flags go up in my head, and I think Hillsong, they're probably not the most, they're not the most, you know, they have a greatest reputation for being gay friendly, and as you sort of alluded to before, they have in the past dealt in sort of ex-gay therapies. What is it like for somebody who's in Hillsong Church, knows what it's like, and is not just a kind of, you know, armchair observer like me? What's it like for a gay person in Hillsong?
Well, I guess it's a challenge. I think no matter which, you know, church or faith you know, religious institution you're at, I think most of them are a challenge. But at the same time, for me, you know, I chose to become a Christian at Hillsong Church, and I've grown up a lot with the church, and I still, a lot of the values and lessons that I have are from that church. I think, you know, while it's difficult, I do see them moving forward. There's a lot of closeted people there, so it's, you know, it's not like you're alone. Like, you might be alone in being out, but there's a lot of closeted people there, and there's some great people there who are very supportive. Even being a gay person there, I got the opportunity to meet with the senior pastor, Brian Houston, late last year, and talk to him about my journey, about what I'd gone through, and he seemed very...
Was he open to hearing about your story? I mean, because I look at, you know, the Hillsong Church, and they seem fairly kind of neutral. They just don't want to sort of get involved in it. But the facade that they put up is not the same as what's happening behind it at a church leadership level.
Well, I think the sad thing and the issue with, I think, larger churches like Hillsong is the fact that you've got the leadership who believe one thing, and then you've got the leaders, there's all these different tiers of leadership because there's so many people there, and so you've got the main leaders who believe one thing and then the other leaders who don't. And so you've got, although the senior pastor, for example, might say one thing about gay and lesbian people, your youth pastor might say another, and there's not really any, any real, coordinated response there, which is hard. And I think with any organization or church where there's a lot of people, that you've got a bit of difficulty in terms of communicating a message through. Now, that's I would still reckon that's their issue to deal with, and they've got to make sure that they, you know, they get a clear position on what they believe about gay and lesbian people, because at the moment they've moved from, you know, referring people to ex-gay programs to now having really no position at all.
Yeah, they issued a statement saying we no longer deal in ex-gay therapies. Is that right?
Yes, that's true.
The only groups that I know of are Exodus Australia and Living Waters. Were those the groups that they dealt with?
Yes, so they dealt with Exodus and Living Waters previously. They also used to refer to online programs, because they have online ex-gay programs. Oh my gosh, to reparative therapy, which is like, it's kind of like when you go and see a psychologist or counsellor.
Yeah, yeah. Did you go along to any of those sort of reparative therapy sessions?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
What do they do there? Because I've heard a couple of different accounts, and some of them seem quite benign, and others, I was talking to Paul Martin a couple of weeks ago, and he said that the women were encouraged to breastfeed as a way of overcoming their, I don't know, their attitudes towards their mothers or something. I don't know the psychotherapy behind that. But, yeah, what do they actually do?
Well, you know, I'm sure things like what Paul said did definitely happen in the past. It wouldn't surprise me. With me, it was pretty similar to counselling or seeing a psychologist, except when I would sit down with them, they'd look at reasons why you might be gay. Mm. So, for example, did you have a distant father? Were you abused when you were younger? And what do you need to do, you know, to improve your masculinity? So this could be, you know, play more sports, go to the gym, hang with other positive influences, like positive men, and, you know, all of these kind of, I guess, things that they thought would fix you or would stop your confusion.
Yeah.
Even though I don't think I've ever really been confused, so.
Did you take up the advice and say, well, I'm going to give this a shot?
Oh, of course I did, of course. Yeah. Again, my knowledge of the gay world or gay community was so wrong, and I had no idea, like, that there were people just like me, and that, you know, there were people that were, you know, amazing, fantastic, loving people, that there were even support networks for me. Mm. I didn't even have a gay friend until I came out, so...
When you came out, did you find that a lot of your friends at the time also came out as well? Because this is, I think, probably a common experience. I don't know if it applies to you, but when I was at school, I thought I knew absolutely no gay people at all. And in the years since I've left school, most of my friendship group has come out as gay. Is that...
Well...
Or is that totally off? And that's just my experience.
No. Like, even since I came out, there's been a few people who were actually part of my friendship group at church who have come out, and people who were some of my friends at high school who have come out as well. It's you know, but that happened, I guess, after I came out, not really before, unfortunately. But yeah. You know, it is fascinating to see that, and to see, you know, what there were so many people right around me that were dealing with exactly the same things that I was.
How many gay people in the church who decide to leave the church, I suppose, because of their sexuality, either because they've been forced out by the church or they've just decided this isn't for me anymore and I need to, like, yeah. I can't be around this anymore?
Yeah, well, you know, I totally understand that. There's even a lot of people I know and a lot of my friends who felt like they needed to leave the church, and it's you know, it's a tough decision to make because generally you've got a lot of friends, you've got a lot of family at the church, but at the same time to go to church every week and to hear, you know, messages which are at times anti-gay or they're against your belief system, and you see the same friends who, you know, have often, you know, made cruel remarks about you, it is difficult. So there are a lot of people who leave the church mainly because it's not a safe space anymore. And I think, you know, that's a sad thing because churches should be above all else a safe space and they should be about justice, but I think they've lost their way a little bit with that.
They come from a background where, you know, Leviticus calls on gay people to be murdered and nobody seems to pay attention to that, and yet it's the parts of the Bible that condemn gay people are the ones that they pay attention to. They pick and choose, is what I'm saying. How do they justify biblically their attitudes, or is it just a, this isn't right and you need to change yourself and this isn't what God wants?
Well, to be honest, I do think it's a lot of pick and choose, and I don't really understand how they can justify their attitudes now. In terms of, like, a lot of, like, the things like Leviticus, even with Christian churches, you can't use Leviticus or you know, Exodus or even anything in Genesis if you're, you know, a modern day Christian church, because they see, you know, obviously the Bible they talk is divided into the Old Testament and the New Testament.
Yeah.
You know, the New Testament overriding the Old. So essentially when you look at that, you've got three verses which talk about homosexuality, and those three verses, even when looked at in depth, can be easily dispelled. Now, and I guess it's about what the Bible actually means, and I guess taking it back often sometimes to its original Greek and Hebrew meanings, which is what it was written into. Even the word homosexuality, for example, wasn't placed in the Bible until 1963 or 1943. Before then, the term actually meant sexually immoral. And the difference between being, you know, for example, in the Bible, sexually immoral and homosexuality is a big leap. So, for example, you can, if you bring that back to original meaning and even the context of the time, you start to learn, you know, quite quickly that what Paul in the book of Romans, in the Bible, for example, was talking about, he wasn't talking about, you know, loving, you know, same-sex relationships that we see today. He was talking about everything from temple prostitution to idol worship to, you know, like everything under the sun, but it was definitely not like kind of what we see today in terms of, you know, being lesbian or gay or bisexual. If you're willing to take the Bible at face value, then there's going to be a whole lot of things that you're going to get wrong and you're going to miss. But with the Bible, like any other book of the time, you need to look at it in context, in culture, and really try to understand what the words mean and what the words say to an audience today.
Because the Bible also prohibits planting two seeds in the same crop and eating shellfish and all this sort of stuff.
With them, I hope that they'll start to look into the issue a little bit more. And it's often until that, for example, a friend or a relative comes out as gay or lesbian, and they actually start to look at what they've been saying for a lot of the time, their entire life, and reevaluate it. Like, for example, my parents, they would still think today that homosexuality was a sin if I'd not come out as gay, because they would have never had an opportunity.
Coming up, the third part of our interview with Ben Gresham. This, however, is a little lady who was inducted into the ARIA Hall of Fame last night.
Yay.
Hi, I'm Kylie Minogue, also known as Kylie from Camberwell, and I'm a proud Joy member.
How do you
number
describe
285.
The feeling? I've only ever dreamt of this.
The hottest divas. Joy 94.9.
Do you think it's as simple as that, that the reason that the churches, a lot of the churches and a lot of, actually, I'm going to amend that, a lot of the church leaders, because the church is not the leaders as such, it's the church is the people in the church. The church leaders are anti-gay, is that they just don't know anything about it and either haven't made an effort to talk to and get to know any gay people, or just haven't had any encounter with them?
I think both. I think there's no effort and there's no encounter. Like, even with, for example, I'm the youth coordinator for a group called Freedom to Be, which is a group of gay, lesbian, bisexual and transgender people from Christian backgrounds. I'm the youth coordinator for that group. We've been going for 6 years now with chapters in Sydney, Melbourne and Brisbane. And there's, you know, been a few pastors that have come along every so often and just gotten to know us and and talk to us and explore different things for themselves. And they've moved forward a lot and even brought that knowledge back to their own church congregations. And so that's fantastic. But even in that whole 6 year period, there's been under 10 pastors that have actually been willing to do that.
How did you become involved in Freedom to Be?
Yeah, well, it's not just a group for Christian people as such. So whether you're in the church, whether you've left the church, whether you've redefined your faith, or whether you have no faith at all, it's a safe space for people, I guess, to connect with people who have been through similar journeys. And that's the beauty about it, because it provides a really great opportunity just to network, to speak to people, to start to unpack some of this stuff that we've been brought up with. With Freedom to Be, I became connected to it after reading Anthony Van Brown's book, A Life of Unlearning. And then I found the website, and through that it helped me come out to my family, come out to my friends, and since then I guess I've never really looked back.
Tell us about your involvement in The Cure, the documentary.
It was a fantastic experience. And the girls who were running it, Rambling Women Media, they were fantastic. And to be honest, it's a very sensitive subject, even for me still, you know, to be involved in this documentary, and I think for a lot of the other people that were involved, it can be sometimes difficult, but, you know, they were really great in terms of how they handled it. I think it's such an important message to get out there that escape programs are damaging and these are the effects and these are the psychological impacts of trying to change your sexuality. And so I think the message that is being portrayed in the Cure is a really important message to get out there to Australians particularly, and just letting them know that this isn't something that's confined to America. This is something that's still happening today. This is something that's happening, you know, in your backyards. This is something that is still quite damaging to gay and lesbian people, and something that, you know, not only Australian society should be looking at, but the church really needs to be looking at their approach to gay and lesbian people and going, is this a good approach? To be honest, I was quite surprised that Ron Brookman, who's head of Living Waters here in Sydney, he appears in the documentary, and he's quite well known for being an ex-gay. He's got a wife now and children and pastors the church. I was really surprised that he was okay to be involved in this documentary. But I think it's good that he is, because, you know, it kind of shows you his perspective.
Have you ever had discussions with him or anybody from Living Waters just about, you know, your experiences and saying, look, I've tried this and it just didn't work, and I think that you're confused in the same way that you think that I'm confused?
Yeah, well, I haven't really had discussions with people from Living Waters, but I have had discussions with people from Exodus and with people from another ex-gay organisation in Sydney called Liberty. And, you know, I share my views, they share their views, and a lot of the time it's not very productive, but, you know, I guess as would be expected, but I was at that stage where I was trying to change. I didn't want anyone to tell me I was wrong. I wanted to believe that I could be straight and that I could have a family and that I could be, you know, just like everybody else at church. But I think if the ex-gay leaders were honest with themselves, then they would admit to still being gay today and to living a lie, which is very sad.
Yeah, absolutely.
So their attitude is that nobody's born gay. They believe that sexual orientation is something that you develop through childhood and that the right environment determines your sexual orientation. And if you've got, for example, an overbearing mother or a distant father, or you've got abuse happening, then most likely you'll be gay or lesbian or a deviation from what they call the norm.
I interviewed Lyle Shelton, who's the Chief of Staff of the Australian Christian Lobby, a couple of weeks ago.
Yep.
And I mentioned to him that the American Psychological Society and various other medical groups, basically every reputable medical organisation in the world, has said that being gay is not a choice, and it's an innate quality to people, the same as being either left-handed or right-handed. It just
exactly.
You just can't choose it. And his response was very interesting. He said, well, there's been a lot of activism in those medical groups, which to me suggests that the Australian Christian Lobby still believes that being gay is a sin and a disorder. How do you think that kind of informs their theology and their political activism? Because they are primarily a political lobbying group.
Yeah, of course. I if they changed their perspective and they actually for once believed that being gay or lesbian was something that was determined at birth and it's something that is unchangeable, then I think they'd have a lot more of a compassionate attitude. And to be honest, I think they'd probably just leave it alone and move on to something that's worthwhile. But
absolutely,
you know, yeah, I think they're afraid of change. They're afraid of something impacting upon their families or their churches or something. I think a lot of it though is fear, which comes out of ignorance.
Yeah. you know, I mean, Jim Wallace appeared on Q&A a couple of weeks ago, and it was kind of forced out of him, but he eventually admitted that Jesus was silent on the issue of homosexuality. Why is this a big deal for them? Why do they care so much? Why are they so obsessed?
It's kind of like the last thing. I think, you know, obviously they fought against so many things in the past in terms of the Christian institution, and even a lot of different religious institutions have followed a similar pattern. But, you know, they went against, you know, for example, in the past, went against divorce. They've gone against interracial marriages, a whole heap of things. And so this is kind of like the last struggle.
Yeah,
and so they don't want to let go, because this means more to them than just about, you know, for example, letting gay and lesbian people marry. This means that they finally lost, and they're no longer the place that people go to look at where to be, you know, a moral person, but they have no voice in society anymore. And I think that's the scary thing for them, is they still want to be heard. And I think if they lose this issue, or if they feel that they're losing this issue, then they'll no longer have a voice in society. I think that's the fear.
Absolutely, yeah. Because they really have made their whole brand and mission about the gays. You know, you look at they'll deny it, but you look at the Australian Christian Lobby website, and 90% of all the content is about keeping the gays away from marriage and stopping the gays from having children. I suppose in a lot of ways they're fighting really to keep themselves relevant in a world where 52% of Australian Christians actually are okay with same-sex marriage.
Exactly. And it's becoming more and more every year, I believe. I think I have a lot of friends today who are Christians, a lot of friends at different churches, and I'm seeing churches more and more every year start to develop a better approach to dealing with gay and lesbian people, and no longer they're referring people to ex-gay programs or even having a comment on same-sex marriage. You know, they admit that they don't have all the answers, which is a first for a lot of them. A lot of them staying silent, which I think is really good. Even an interesting note with the same-sex marriage thing is that Australia's two largest churches are silent on same-sex marriage issue.
Is that the Catholic Church and the Anglican Church, or...?
No, the two largest individual churches, which are Hillsong and Christian City Church...
Okay, yep.
...are completely silent on the issue of same-sex marriage.
Yeah.
And I think that's an interesting thing to note, because I think we often give even some of the vocal minorities a bit too much credit. For you always see, for example, Peter Jensen from the Sydney Anglicans up there, you know, talking against same-sex marriage, and a few other people talking against same-sex marriage, but in reality, the fastest-growing religious denominations, which are a lot of the Pentecostal and charismatic denominations, are quite silent on the whole issue.
It feels like the vocal minority has really hijacked the discussion and hijacked Christians.
Yeah. Even on Facebook, there's a group, Australian Christians Against the Australian Christian Lobby.
Yeah.
It's quite funny. Even you go into, for example, Coorong, which is a large Christian resource shop here in Sydney, and I think there's a few in Melbourne and also Brisbane, but you go in there and you can find books on ex-gay therapy right alongside books that tell you, you know, how to reach out into the gay and lesbian community and how to love them.
Why do you think that a lot of pro-gay Christians don't get the same amount of media exposure as the, you know, the Jim Wallaces and the Wendy Francises?
Well, I think if we're honest, I think even we'd admit that they're not as interesting to watch.
Yeah. Is it just the media saying, well, you know, just the media being lazy, saying, well, we need to get a Christian comment. Obviously, we'll go to the nuttiest Christians we can find, because that'll be interesting and it'll get ratings.
I think so. I think that's part of it. I think the other part of it is that, you know, that obviously the ones that are quite nutty, the ones that are quite right-wing, are always putting their hands up to have some media spotlight. And so, you know, they're easily accessible. You know, they've been heard of before. And so, you know, obviously you're going to cause a bit of controversy, you're going to get high ratings with these people. So why not bring them out? That's what obviously their justification is.
Now, just a week from now, 6 days from now, is going to be the Australian Labor Party conference. Have you, or has the church been involved at all in, or Freedom to Be involved in, I suppose, the negotiations and the discussions regarding the Labor Party's policy on a binding position on same-sex marriage?
Well, I think at the moment, you know, almost everyone is talking about this, and it seems to be quite a big issue. Strangely enough, again, I haven't heard anything in church about it, and church doesn't seem to be talking about it at all.
Mm-hmm.
In regards to myself, you know, I'll be there on Saturday in Sydney at the big rally for the Labor Party conference with my partner and also my parents, and so that's quite exciting. And with, you know, I think there's a lot of people from Freedom to Be that are going to be there as well. I think it's going to be quite a big event. And I think a lot of us are putting our support behind it.
Absolutely. Now, before I let you go, Ben, the documentary The Cure, does it have a release date?
It's coming out next year.
Yep.
It'll be playing at quite a few festivals. I know it's already been approved for the Brisbane Queer Film Festival, and I think they've got a few more approvals as well, but I'm not sure. I think the girls would know.
Ben Gresham, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Your voice,
your radio station.
Joy 94.9.
Generation X and Joy 94.9. That was Ben Gresham speaking to us about Freedom to Be. Now, you can get in touch with Freedom to Be. It's Freedom to Be, so two, the number two, and the letter B.org. So freedomtobe.org, and you can find all the links to Ben there.
He's great, isn't he?
Yeah. It's just really interesting to talk to somebody who's from a different perspective, because, I mean, my parents are very sort of secular and not very religious at all. I didn't have a whole lot of problem, you know, from that perspective, coming to terms with my sexuality. So it's interesting getting that perspective. Generation X and Joy 94.9. We've got to wrap up really, really quickly. Twitter.com/GenXJoy949. That's where you can get all the information about what we've been talking about today. Look up at Freedom to Be, as well as the Northcote Town Hall are hosting a YGLAM short stories film series event called Love Stories. Looks very, very interesting. Get onto that. This is Generation X and Joy.